We're going to touch briefly now on an article in a magazine called Tikkun, T-I-K-K-U-N. This, once again, will feature Peter Dale Scott. By the way, research credit on this belongs to a listener. And Peter Dale Scott discusses the role of the left cover given Oswald in instrumenting the, necessitating the cover-up in an article. This is an interview with Tikkun's editors, and it's called The Assassination and the Cover-Up, What Really Happened, an interview between Tikkun's editors and Peter Dale Scott. Scott replies to Tikkun, skipping well down into the interview, "I can prove that there were many arrangements and conspiracies to cover up who killed Kennedy. Some of these were almost certainly benign, such as the motives of Earl Warren, who, when he accepted the position as chair of the investigating commission, spoke of the need to avoid World War III. But there were also people who conspired before the assassination to link Lee Harvey Oswald to the KGB. And those people were largely grouped around the WACCFL, and we're going to take a look at that right now. Now, bear in mind, again, the name of Stefan Bandera. One of the things that we looked at in Radio Free America program number 15 was the assassination of Stefan Bandera. Bandera, again, had been a Ukrainian fascist working for an independent, albeit fascist, Ukraine. He worked very closely with the Third Reich and with Galen's Fremde Heere Ost. He then jumped to the CIA with Galen. He had also begun to work with British intelligence, and Reinhard Galen basically had never forgiven the British for fighting against Nazi Germany. Galen was extremely jealous of his operatives, and the available evidence suggests that even though the official version of Stefan Bandera's assassination is that he was killed by a KGB assassin named Bogdan Stashinsky, S-T-A-S-H-Y-N-S-K-Y, in fact, the available evidence suggests that Stashinsky was actually a double agent for Galen. Stefan Bandera was killed on October 15, 1959, by the way. That was the exact same date that Lee Harvey Oswald first, quote, defected, unquote, to Russia. The assassination of Stefan Bandera, performed apparently with a specialized weapon which fired a cyanide gas pellet, which then killed the victim, in this case Bandera, using cyanide gas. The killing went unsolved for a year and a half. Then Bogdan Stashinsky supposedly defected to the West, or he came over to the West, and he had in his pocket a broken key, the shaft for a key, which, upon examination, turned out to match exactly the broken half, the other half, which was still lodged. Now, we're talking a year and a half later, still lodged in the lock of Stefan Bandera's apartment. Now, when dealing with the intelligence community, it's important to understand the resources and the methodology and the operational techniques of a modern intelligence agency. If a key operative like Stefan Bandera had been assassinated, any modern intelligence agency would cover absolutely every square inch of information in order to find out what had happened, or every square inch of territory. It would have gained all of the information it needed in order to find out just exactly what had happened with this particular assassination. Now, the notion that this particular key, broken off from its shaft, could have remained in the lock of Stefan Bandera's apartment for a year and a half, and then along comes Bogdan Stashinsky, along comes Jones, so to speak, and says, look what I've got here in my pocket, a broken key, and then the Galen organization goes, whoops, look what we found, here's the other half of that broken key, goddamn, you must be the assassin of Stefan Bandera. Although this might appear to be nitpicking to the uninitiated observer, any trained student of intelligence activity could recognize this as a very obvious okey-doke from the day one. So the available evidence, it was not airtight, but the available evidence suggests very strongly that, as E.H. Cookridge suggests in Galen's Spy of the Century, Galen was jealous of Bandera's work with the British, although he sticks, Cookridge does, with the official Bogdan Stashinsky KGB assassination theory. Later, the KGB produced a Galen turncoat who said that, in fact, Stashinsky was working for Galen as a double agent, and that Galen had assassinated Stefan Bandera. The okey-doke with the broken key suggests that that was the more probable explanation. What we're going to take a look at now is the efforts both before and after the assassination of President Kennedy by elements of the WACCFL, this reconstituted anti-Comintern, this second anti-Comintern, which in 1967 would formally coalesce as the World Anti-Communist League, a major vehicle of American covert operation and foreign policy in the succeeding years, very much involved with the Ronald Reagan administration. What we're going to see now is the WACCFL's efforts in painting Oswald Red as a KGB/Castro assassin, and this led many of the people on the Warren Commission, including Earl Warren, who spoke of the need to avoid World War III, to cover up the fact that there was very, very obviously a conspiracy, because if enough of this communist, quote, or Oswald's communist cover disinformation got out, it could precipitate the desire on the part of the American people for an all-out war with the Soviet Union, because Kennedy, despite the extent to which he was despised by the elements that we've been covering this evening, as well as many elements of the American national security establishment, Kennedy was very popular with the American people. Turning now to the WACCFL's attempts to link the assassination of Stefan Bandera with the assassination of John Kennedy, Peter Dale Scott writes as follows. The death in Munich on October 15, 1959, of Ukrainian guerrilla leader Stefan Bandera, allegedly at the hands of Soviet agent Bogdan Stashinsky, was exploited by Ukrainian nationalist and anti-Bolshevik nation spokesmen to demonstrate the importance of their movement to the Soviet authorities, and, more particularly, to oppose the growing rapprochement between the American and Soviet governments. Later, spokesmen for the American right wing sought to link Stashinsky to Oswald, some even speculating that they had both been trained at the same special, quote, Department 13, unquote, school for assassins in Moscow. Curiously, none of these spokesmen observed that the date of Bandera's death, October 15, 1959, was the date Oswald entered Russia. But at least one of these pro-Ukrainian spokesmen, former Representative Charles Kersten, K-E-R-S-T-E-N, who had succeeded Edison as a member of the World Anti-Communist Steering Committee alluded to earlier, began to develop the picture of a Soviet assassin conspiracy 2 weeks before the assassination. And in an article here from the Philadelphia Daily News, reprinted from the Ukrainian Bulletin of the ABN, and by the way, a fellow named Charles Moser, who's on the editorial board of the Ukrainian Bulletin, also deeply involved with the Free Congress Foundation. We looked at that in Radio Free America 36. This particular article, again, in which Charles Kersten, who, by the way, was the counsel for Mrs. Bandera at Bogdan Stashinsky's trial, he attempts, and this is 2 weeks before Kennedy's assassination, to link the assassination of Stefan Bandera to a KGB assassination program, which would also result in the KGB assassinating American people in America and American political leaders. The article reads, 15 days before he was shot down, President Kennedy was warned that assassins were being trained in Russia to commit murders in the U.S. and England. This warning was voiced in a letter former Representative Charles Kersten, Republican of Wisconsin, sent the late president and his brothers, Attorney General Robert Kennedy and Senator Edward Kennedy. The burden of Kersten's letter was an effort to obtain administration help in focusing public attention on the assassination of Stefan Bandera, the Ukrainian underground leader, by communist agents. In urging this, Kersten wrote, quote, "The Senate Internal Security Subcommittee has been contemplating a hearing of the killing in Munich of the Ukrainian underground leader Stefan Bandera by the former Soviet agent Bogdan Stashinsky, whose German trial Kersten attended as counsel for Mrs. Bandera. It was a bizarre assassination, illustrating the subversive operations of the Soviet police in the free world. Apparently, the State Department is trying to prevent the hearing. Before his defection, Stashinsky was being trained for high-level killings in England and the U.S. There are others in such training, according to his testimony." And then Peter Dale Scott resumes his text. 3 or 4 days after the Kennedy assassination, a Munich right-wing newspaper linked to the ABN, the Deutsche Nationalzeitung and Soldatenzeitung, was able to publish the hitherto unrevealed story that Oswald shot at General Walker, and added to it the story that Oswald and Ruby together had been released at the insistence of Robert Kennedy. Either coincidentally or conspiratorially, The press secretary of the World Anti-Communist Congress for Freedom and Liberation Steering Committee added to the picture that Oswald was part of a left-wing assassination plot. The press secretary was Salvador Diaz Verson, D-I-A-Z, capital V-E-R-S-O-N, president of the Liga Anticomunista de Cuba, and a former chief of Cuba's military intelligence service under Prio Sekeres, that's capital P-R-I-O, capital S-O-C-A-R-R-A-S. He helped start an unfounded rumor in Miami that Oswald, while in Mexico City in September of 1963, quote, met the Cuban ambassador in a Mexico City restaurant, and they drove off in the ambassador's car so they could talk privately, unquote. Other Cuban exiles in Miami, in touch with State Department security officers, were at this time spreading rumors about the pro-Castro connections of Jack Ruby. We shall come later to Oswald's apparent link, while in New Orleans in 1963, to Americans who were in touch with the Latin American elements of the WACCFL steering committee. Maurice Brooks Gatlin, part of a right-wing group at an address used by Oswald for his Fair Play for Cuba committee, attended a Congress in 1958 of the Inter-American Confederation for the Defense of the Continent, CIADC, along with the aforementioned Salvador Diaz Verson, Fritz Kramer, Ku Cheng Kang of the APACL, and Nestor Prochyk, P-R-O-C-Y-K, the chairman of the American Friends of the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations. By the way, that was in 58. Spaz T. Rakin later succeeded him, and he met Oswald at the boat. Continuing, all of this suggests a continuity underlying the significance of Oswald's contact with Spaz T. Rakin in June of 1962. So let's pause and analyze this last section of the Dallas conspiracy. Now, first of all, again, the WACCFL had begun spreading, or elements of it, namely Charles Kirsten, had begun developing a Soviet assassination conspiracy story 2 weeks before the assassination. And again, the Bandera hit was almost certainly performed by the Galen organization. And bear in mind, again, that Charles Kirsten began developing this story 2 weeks before Kennedy was assassinated. It was then picked up after Kennedy was assassinated to help portray Lee Harvey Oswald as having been trained at the same Department 13 assassination school as Bogdan Stashinsky. And bear in mind, again, as we've already seen, Gerhard Fry's newspaper publishes the Walker story in the Deutsche National Zeitung and Saraten Zeitung linked to the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations of the WACCFL. Now, bear in mind also that the WACCFL's press secretary, a Cuban fascist and a former intelligence chief named Salvador Diaz Verson, began to develop a story after the assassination linking Lee Harvey Oswald to Fidel Castro. Now, bear in mind, too, that Lee Harvey Oswald had been the lone member of the Fair Play for Cuba Committee, an alleged pro-Castro organization. The address for his literature was 544 Camp Street. This was the same address as the detective agency of Guy Bannister, which had served as a front for the CIA's anti-Castro efforts in New Orleans. And bear in mind that the Cuban Revolutionary Council's office in New Orleans, that being the CIA's anti-Castro Cuban umbrella organization, had been founded by Sergio Arcacha Smith at that address. Arcacha Smith, as we've seen in the recent addendum to the Guns of November Part 3, was directly linked to David Ferry. And by the way, it was former Texas Governor John Connally who refused to extradite Sergio Arcacha Smith to New Orleans for Jim Garrison's investigation. Now, one of Guy Bannister's investigators for the Bannister Detective Agency at the 544 Camp Street, 531 Lafayette Place address, accurately portrayed in the Stone movie, was the aforementioned Maurice Brooks Gatlin, Jr., and he was directly in touch with the Latin American elements of the WACCFL and had attended a meeting in 1958 with Salvador Diaz Verson, the press secretary of the WACCFL, developing the Oswald Castro canard, as well as Fritz Kramer, who we've looked at, the Abwehr agent who had been involved with people involved with the first anti-Comintern and then linked up with people involved with the WACCFL, the new anti-Comintern. Also bear in mind that the then Secretary General, this in 1958, of the American Friends of the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, Nestor Prochik, at this same meeting. By the way, Maurice Brooks Gatlin Jr. died in the fall from a Panama Hotel window in died when he fell from the window of his Panama hotel room in 1965. I would also note that Maurice Brooks Gatlin Jr., as we looked at in the Guns of November, Maurice Brooks Gatlin Jr. had boasted of carrying a $100,000 payment to the French generals of the secret army organization, the OAS, L'Organisation de l'Armée Secrète, that were involved in trying to assassinate French President Charles de Gaulle. They were irate over his granting of independence to the former French colony of Algeria. Many of those same French generals had been involved with the French fascist movement of Vichy, which collaborated with the Germans. I would also note that one of these key generals, one of the generals in the OAS, and Maurice Brooks Gatlin Jr. testified to having taken $100,000 from the CIA to those generals. One of those generals was a fellow named Raoul Salon, last name S-A-L-A-N, who was protected from extradition for his participation in the attempts on de Gaulle's life by none other than Reinhard Gehlen. This, by the way, is covered in the aforementioned book, Gehlen, Spy of the Century. So, again, we're taking a look at people directly involved with Lee Harvey Oswald in New Orleans, the 544 Camp Street, 531 Lafayette Place address. Again, Maurice Brooks Gatlin, one of Bannister's investigators, deeply involved with this same milieu, the WACCFL, and the ABN elements that we've been looking at, which were involved not only with trafficking Lee Harvey Oswald around in New Orleans. The same milieu, the Gehlen ABN milieu, was involved with trafficking the Oswalds around in Dallas-Fort Worth, may have been involved with trafficking, handling the Oswalds in the former Soviet Union, and these same elements were involved with generating the false testimony by Marina implicating Lee Harvey Oswald in the Edwin Walker killing. Again, Walker first mentioned that in a call to Gerhard Frey's Deutsche National Zeitung und Soldatenzeitung days before Marina Oswald supposedly revealed that to the world. George Bush associate George de Morenshield corroborated Marina's story, and as we've seen, the WACCFL was instrumental in helping to generate the disinformation concerning Oswald as a KGB slash Castro assassin linked to Bogdan Stashinsky in the training, the alleged training by the KGB of Bogdan Stashinsky to assassinate Stefan Bandera. Again, this is a dizzying tangle of connections. It's one of the reasons why I paused to go into this. We're looking at this, again, to understand the nature of the milieu and the political forces which not only killed President Kennedy, but which quite obviously have had a profound effect on the world since. And we're after a short musical break, we're going to take a look at how the goals of the ABN and the OUN-UPA of Stefan Bandera and the methodology of the NTS, also involved with trafficking around the Oswalds and killing President Kennedy, how these goals have now been realized in the former Soviet Union. And in weeks to come, we're going to see how these goals are in the process of being realized in the United States. By the way, take note again of Cuban exiles in Miami, as Peter Dale Scott notes, involved in generating the disinformation that Jack Ruby was connected to Castro. It was George Bush, the associate of George de Morenshield, who was dispatched to gauge the reaction of the Miami anti-Castro Cuban exile community to Kennedy's assassination. One of the questions I have is whether perhaps Bush was involved with generating some of these disinformation attempts. We're going to take a musical break now, and then we're going to come back with the last few minutes of tonight's program, and we're going to tie things up. We will be coming back to this again as we proceed with Radio Free America number 37.